The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. How are you?
Just looking at a very interesting article and a picture of an Israeli F-35 fighter, which apparently was caught by a photographer while it was flying over Lebanon and was actually broadcast on Hezbollah TV. And it's an interesting thing because obviously the Israeli Air Force would never deny the fact that they would be flying these aircraft over Lebanon. In fact, I think the head of the Israeli Air Force actually even revealed a photograph of an F-35 that was flying over Beirut at some point. So just an interesting thing because these F-35s are supposedly never really seen in combat. They're so stealth. They fly under the radar. They are one of the most sophisticated aeroplanes. But we do know that they have been used definitely in operations to attack enemy targets in the past. And obviously are being used for the gathering of intelligence. And I suspect that that's probably what was happening when this particular photographer managed to pick up that aircraft. Quite a number, apparently six all in all that were flying over Lebanon. So, while we sleep, there's
all
a
sorts
lot of action
of things
going
happening. Yeah, I just wonder as well. I mean, these were the F-35s are part of the deal with the UAE, isn't it?
Apparently, yeah. I mean, there's so much being written in recent weeks about these F-35s, even some disparaging reports coming out of the U.S. about, you know, are they really all that they're cracked up to be, and why is it that so many countries are fighting over the possibility of being able to buy these? We do understand that the UAE will be acquiring some from the U.S., and apparently this was something that Prime Minister Netanyahu is alleged to have agreed to as part of the peacemaking process, as part of the normalization of the ties. We can't really confirm that because there really is no evidence to support it. It's simply rumors that have been circulating out in the public and may well be true, but certainly a bone of contention for many people.
Absolutely. Let's just talk about the initial evidence around the vaccines in Israel. Has it started to have an impact yet?
Well, there are reports that have come out from various sources about what impact the vaccine is having. We understand that almost 500,000 people have been vaccinated and have also had the week pass since the second vaccination, because the procedure is have your first vaccination 21 days later, have your second vaccination. We are using the Pfizer vaccine and also will be using the Moderna vaccine. I'm not quite sure to what extent Moderna is available in Israel yet, but in the large part, we're using Pfizer. The Pfizer vaccine does require two vaccinations 21 days apart. And so that's what's been happening. And then after your second vaccination, we're told that we need to wait a week to 10 days before we can consider ourselves to be fully immune, have the impact of that vaccination fully take effect in our systems. So the health ministry has published data which shows that something like 430,000 people have already received the vaccination and the week has passed. And out of those 428,000, 63 people have contracted COVID-19. Now, out of those 63 people, we understand that most of them are in the 55 and over category, which kind of makes sense because they were the first people to be vaccinated. Mm-hmm. So those are really the people within the catchment area of the study at the moment. But I think the other little anecdotal piece of evidence, which I think is very important, is that those people who fell ill even having had the vaccinations, apparently didn't suffer too severe consequences, severe illness as a result of catching the virus. So these are all the most positive things that we'd hope to find out about the vaccine and the impact of the vaccine. One of the specific medical health organizations in Israel, Maccabi, showed that they had 128,000 people who received the second dose. 20 of them contracted the virus. So, the numbers are small. One would have hoped that, they might even be smaller than that. But I would suggest that 63 out of 428,000 is something that we could probably live with going forward, if that's what is going to happen, particularly if their symptoms are going to be really marginal. You know, they're going to be much, much more played down, because as things stand at the moment, you know, our medical health facilities are struggling. There is no doubt that the numbers, even though the number of new infections seem to fall a little bit, and again, I'm not sure if that little drop has the weekend effect in it, or if that's a genuine drop that we can see moving forward. But there are still so many people in hospital on ventilators. Another hospital from Jerusalem announced that they won't be able to take any more COVID patients because effectively they are full. They can't cope with any more. And so this is becoming a very serious issue. If the hospitals are unable to accept new patients who are ill, then we're into a serious situation, which obviously is too much for us to cope. So Hadassah Hospital announced yesterday, Hadassah in Jerusalem, saying that they simply can't accept any more COVID-19 patients. And that is a message that we're getting from many other hospitals. Some of the other hospitals have said slightly different things. They've said they're unable to accept scheduled surgeries for illnesses that are not emergency, considered to be emergency. So a lot of hospitals are scaling back on activities in an attempt to try to cope with the situation. And let's hope that the reduction in the number of newly diagnosed patients, of whom there are something like 71,000 active cases in Israel at the moment, let's hope that the reduction will also see itself take impact on the hospitals, because obviously that's the next stage, is to relieve somehow the medical facilities. And of course, rumors that our lockdown might well be extended. We spoke yesterday about the airport being closed, which is certainly the case. I said yesterday that the initial announcement suggests that the airport will only be closed until the end of the month, which is even less than a week. There is certainly talk about extending that lockdown and extending the closure of the airport potentially to another week. The airport in particular, as we said yesterday, is taken super seriously, and that, you know, there won't just be an automatic rollover of the situation. The airport will be considered probably on a weekly basis as to whether, you know, it's the right time to reopen it. There are talks about an Israeli variant now. I'm not quite sure how that differs from the various other variants that have been discussed, but I've seen discussed in some newspapers the possibility of an Israeli variant. And of course, this issue that, of course, we can be smart after the event, but some people have suggested that all of those travelers who flocked to Dubai following the normalization of the Israeli United Arab Emirates diplomatic relations, that so many people then went over to Dubai, which was freely accepting Israelis without the need to go into quarantine. Loads of those people have come back with virus infections. And so there are certainly places in the press that are accusing the government of effectively sponsoring a mass infection by allowing people to go to Dubai and back without the need for quarantine, because now we are feeling the effects of so many of the people who have returned back having already contracted the virus there or on the way back or whatever it is. And unfortunately, we're having to suffer the consequences of that right now.
Yesterday we spoke about what was going on in the Haredi communities or in some Haredi communities. Has that settled down a bit?
Well, I think it's too soon to tell. The antagonism that exists within the Haredi community towards the authorities in general and towards the police in particular continues. There is a certain standoff at the moment after some terrible vandalism took place the day before yesterday. A bus driver was almost killed when his bus was set alight, and vandalism across Jerusalem and other parts of Israel as well. So all of that very, very unwelcome. And it just doesn't make sense that we have, you know, Jews fighting against Jews, police are trying to effectively help people to save their own lives, and in turn being attacked by, so that, you know, that animosity that exists certainly hasn't gone away. Things are kind of calmed down a little at the moment. I don't know whether that means that the police have simply stopped trying to enforce the COVID-19 rules, because the Haredi community seems very determined to go on with life as normal, which means congregating in learning places, in schools, in yeshivot, in kollel, in all kinds of going to prayer services, which are at the moment not allowed for more than 10 people praying outdoors. Never mind the fact that we're only allowed to congregate with up to 5 people socially distanced inside. So that does not constitute a prayer service, obviously, because it's less than the required 10 people, who are the minimum for a minyan required to conduct a prayer service. So if people are truly adhering to this, then they may well be praying outside with a total of 10 people, no more. But of course, that's not been the case. And the Haredi community, the ultra-Orthodox community, are very determined to go their own route, to do their own thing, to keep their own life structures in place as if though nothing is happening. The problem, of course, is unfortunately that without them being willing to recognize it and say it out loud, it is having a devastating effect on their community, with so many people ill, with so many deaths having been registered in that particular sector. It just seems unfathomable to me that they can continue to behave like normal when the situation is clearly not normal. But at the moment, there seems to be absolutely no evidence of the fact that they're going to change their ways or suddenly take on new practices. So the standoff with the police continues, and it's going to be interesting to see what actions happen next in order to try somehow to protect that community, because that's effectively what we need to do.
Absolutely. Hachamora says, just saw photos of Israel's F-35s. Looks misidentified and rather F-15s, but too blurry to see. Anthony, tell us about Mal Khalifa. We spoke to Vic Aladef in Australia a little bit earlier. She's on her way, finally. How does Israel repair the damage that it has, I believe, that it has done with its relationship, in its relationship with Australia, because of how it behaved around this, which in my view is appalling?
I agree. I mean, firstly, finally, Mal Khalifa did board a flight on the way to Frankfurt, and then from there onto Australia, finally, after years and years and years of legal battles. And I think it's going to take some time to repair the damage, Howard. And I think the damage has been done in a number of different ways. First of all, we can't discount we can't ignore the damage that's been done towards the Australian Jewish community. The Australian Jewish community is one of the communities that has really been great supporters of Israel over the years. Really great supporters. Many Australians made Aliyah. Israel really is an important part of the lives of Jewish Australians, many of them who are also former South Africans. There's a large community of former South Africans in Australia. Israel is a very important part of their lives, and this episode has damaged that relationship almost beyond recognition, because Israel seems to have just behaved in an appropriate way. And not only appropriate just anecdotally, but there seem to have been actions taking place at a governmental ministerial level in order to stop the wheels of justice turning in the way that they should do. So this has been some active intervention of the system, which has caused great damage. We're going to have to work very, very hard to repair the damage with the Australian Jewish community, and indeed with the Australian government, which finally got its way to get the deportation order executed with Mal Khalifa boarding that plane. I think this court case will bring out all of that bad feeling as the court case progresses, and then hopefully we will get to the end of the case. The judgment will be whatever it will be, and then slowly but surely, and it's going to take time to rebuild this relationship both with the community and with the Australian government. Fortunately, the diplomatic relations with Australia have not yet been damaged to the point where things have broken off. So there still continues to be the dialogue with the Australian government. And I think it's going to be slowly but surely showing some goodwill, some willingness to understand that this relationship will be repaired. But it's not going to be overnight, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I saw that, or Vic Aladef mentioned earlier, that there's even a push by some to ask her if, by her lawyer, to say that if she's found guilty, would they consider her serving her sentence in Israel? I can't imagine that's going to go down very well.
There certainly are legal precedents to that, where governments agree to transfer prisoners who've been convicted abroad to serve their prison sentences in Israel. I think that because the prison conditions in Australia and Israel probably, I'm guessing, are quite similar. We won't find, you know, it's not like some countries where the prison conditions are so extreme that by allowing them to serve their sentence in Israel, it's almost like relieving them of part of their punishment. I think that the prison conditions in Israel, in Australia, are pretty similar to the ones in Israel, which means quite comfortable. I mean, adhering to Geneva Convention rules and things like that. I'm not quite sure how that will pan out, but I suspect that the Israeli government is going to need to be very, very flexible if they are to ask for that, to agree to that, in order not to disturb the relations more than they have been already.
Absolutely right. Anthony Reich, it is 8 o'clock. Thank you for that. The Israel Report, which comes to you every morning at this time.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.